Dr. J. Michelson is a rabbi, an activist, author, a meditation teacher, and an attorney who's a member of the Supreme Court Bar, and a superhero for radio hosts looking to get a big picture view of an unprecedented Supreme Court term. As that term gets underway, I'm grateful to welcome Jay back to State of Belief Radio. Jay, thanks for being with us again.
Pleasure. It's always great to be here, Welton.
There's a lot of unforgettable events that got us to this present moment. Blocked appointments, rushed appointments, and repeatedly an attitude among many Americans that it can't really get that bad. Well, what are we potentially on the threshold of this term?
Well, this is the time where you and I get to say, I told you so. I wish we didn't get to do that. It's kind of bittersweet, right? So,
yes.
You know, we've been talking about this for years on this program and elsewhere, that the Supreme Court's legitimacy is being damaged, that justices are being vetted by an extreme right-wing network and organization for very specific reasons. And now the public has caught up with that. I think the wake-up call obviously was the Texas abortion case, which almost everyone assumed would be put on hold pending the lawsuit. And then the Supreme Court decided not to do that. That was very surprising to a lot of people, but not necessarily to those of us who understand what these justices were put here to do. Mm-hmm. So what can we expect this term on the, you know, the smaller scale, but it's not a small scale at all, but on the, you know, on the immediate scale, a sharp limiting of Roe versus Wade and probably a very expansive reading of the Second Amendment. But in a larger picture, you know, this is a real test for the legitimacy of the Supreme Court, and all signs are that it's going to fail.
Hmm. There are so many cases right now that are custom built to take on.
Well, all of these cases, certainly in abortion, but also in gun rights and also in other areas, are crafted. These aren't, you know, individual people or even senators or legislators who come up with these cases. They're really, I wouldn't call it a vast right-wing conspiracy, but for folks who didn't see Senator Sheldon Whitehouse's kind of pictorial description of the network of judicial appointments and then activist organizations bringing lawsuits, it is kind of one large apparatus. It's been very successful at moving the needle far to the right, not just of where the court has been, but also where the American people are. You know, something like between 60% and 70% of Americans support the basic right of a woman to decide what to do with her own body up to the point of viability of the fetus. And now that's certainly going to be overturned. The only question is how much it's going to be overturned. So we've seen, you know, this is the fruition, the positive fruition for those who have worked for this long to shift the court to the right. And, you know, I think it, what I think you and I talked about back in January of this year, you know, possibly increasing the size of the court or instituting term limits, those may have seemed like radical ideas several months ago. But I think by the end of this court term, they will seem like reasonable countermeasures to an unprecedented attack on our democratic institutions by a relatively small number of people who have captured the attention of senators. And we have three justices on the Supreme Court, all appointed by the last president, under a cloud, under different clouds. Mm-hmm. And those justices will now be deciding the fates of millions of people.
If Biden now went ahead with adding justices, even if he were to do that at this point, it wouldn't affect anything about what happens in the court this year.
No, it would take time. And, you know, I'm one who I believe enough time has elapsed. He had a commission that was supposed to report in September, you know, their results and their recommendations. You know, this Congress is going to be a lame duck Congress a year from now, and it's going to change. Ultimately, I have a sort of optimistic view that some of the battles over abortion in particular will prove to the Democrats' benefit. That's optimistic from my point of view. Mm. But absolutely. This ship has sailed. And, you know, it's definitely now, this is why we get to say, I told you so, because we've been telling people so for years that it matters. These judgeships and justiceships matter. And these are the consequences. And now that the consequences are here, you know, the milk has already been spilled. You can't put it back in the jar. Hopefully we'll be able to wipe up the mess.
If they ask you what to do, would you increase the number of justices?
I've gone on record as supporting term limits rather than increasing the number of justices, but term limits that go into effect immediately. You know, Justice Thomas is the most senior member of the court, so it would affect him. And this isn't going after him. Justice Breyer is also a senior member of the court. It's just a matter of how many years folks have been on the court. And I had in a Daily Beast article back in January, kind of the details of that, what life expectancy really was for justices when the Constitution was ratified. There was never an idea that people would be sitting on the court, you know, for 40 years. Yeah. And the stakes are just absolutely too high. And by having term limits as well, you regularize when the next confirmation battles will happen, because mm-hmm. you know when they're going to cycle in. Having said that, there are a lot of very smart experts, much smarter than me, who have come up with various proposals, whether it's adding two justices to the court or changing the way confirmations happen. There are a number of different proposals, but the time to act is now. And mm-hmm. I feel like there's this moment where public attention is focused on the court because of the abortion case. But we can't wait. Folks, you know, on the progressive side, can't wait until June, which is when the ruling will probably come down, to act. Because by June, it's already the summer. It's already a lame duck Congress. It's already election season. The time to act is now.
Do you see the movements that you want to see for that to happen?
No. We're seeing a lot of hand waving, but nothing more than that. There hasn't been a formal proposal from the Biden administration. There haven't been formal recommendations from the commission. There have been bills, you know, introduced in Congress, but, you know, there are always bills introduced in Congress. There hasn't been like a serious prioritization of it. You know, one thing the House could do with its Democratic majority is pass a couple of bills through the House. And maybe center some momentum and see where these things congeal. You know how these work. There are multiple proposals, and it would make sense to kind of advance several of them and just see what the appetite is for any of them. Obviously, like everything else, it's going to depend on a couple of centrist senators from Arizona and West Virginia. So it's likely that the most radical proposals will not succeed. And so it's a matter of finding where there might be some common ground, and then, of course, dealing with the filibuster. So it's a long road ahead, which is why this has to happen quickly.
I've been reading commentary about the precipitous drop in confidence the Supreme Court is suffering, considering its reputation as being above partisanship. Are we seeing a new level of distrust, or is it just part of a historic cycle?
No, numerically, we're definitely seeing a new level of distrust. The levels of distrust and believing that the Supreme Court is a political actor are higher now than they have been, you know, on record. There have been times at which the court has enjoyed more public support and times where it's enjoyed less. But we haven't really seen this. We also haven't seen the court take it this seriously. You know, Justice Alito and Justice Breyer and others are kind of going around talking a lot, which we haven't seen in recent Supreme Court history. You and I could, again, we take another victory lap that Justice Alito mentioned some of the work that we've advanced on Leonard Leo and the Federalist Society. I think his exact phrase was that there are some who see a dangerous cabal. I have the exact right, a dangerous cabal that resorts to sneaky and improper methods to get its ways. That's a great summary of my expose on Leonard Leo, which, to toot my own horn, was the first long form report on that. And that's exactly what there is. There is this dangerous cabal. And I think I don't think the public is aware of all of those details, but I think they are aware that kind of the fix is in. And certainly with Justice Barrett replacing the late Justice Ginsburg, you know, with 5 minutes before the election, that was sort of another low point that mm-hmm. for a lot of people really damaged the legitimacy of the court. And again, we said so at the time. You know, it's like you feel like Cassandra kind of raising up the alarm that these actions will diminish the legitimacy of the court. These actions will diminish the legitimacy of the court. We say it many times, and it has now happened, and it's come to pass. And I think this is guesswork, but I think it's going to get worse before it gets better, because we will have a case in the Mississippi case. We will have a decision that will limit abortion rights. We will have a decision in New York that will limit gun control, which is enormously popular outside the the right half of the Republican Party. And so we will have these very political and important, impactful decisions come out this term. So I think it's going to get worse.
Well, I mean,
which is good that it's going to get worse, right? Yeah. I mean, this is not. There's a sense in which the Federalist Society and others have gotten away with this for 15, 20 years. And they can say the rhetoric of, the American people want this and the American people want that, but we can measure what the American people want. Yeah. And the court is far, far, far to the right of the center. This isn't about, whether we're going to have, some progressive wish list. This is just way to the right of center of American public opinion. And it's been engineered that way. With a very deliberate strategy, knowing the way that public opinion has shifted, various right-wing religious organizations recognize that the only way to kind of lock in or slow down the pace of change would be to capture the court system, and that's what they've done.
Well, I might as well do it. I'm going to jump into the I told you so as well. and you and I know have talked about this, but when you look at the framing of current cases in terms of religious freedom, I wonder how different that is from the way similar issues would have been presented just a generation ago. Are we now seeing the relentless effort to redefine religious freedom that we've talked about so many times?
Oh, it's already happened. I mean, it's happened in numerous court cases. I think we talked about the Fulton case out of Philadelphia about same-sex adoption, which was a narrower setback than many expected, but still was a setback. And it's certainly the writing is on the wall. But the real shocker to me, and I've written about this as well, were the series of COVID cases during the pandemic, in which at first a minority and then a majority after Justice Barrett came on the court, so later a majority of Supreme Court justices simply waved away science and public health recommendations and clear reasons why you would want to treat houses of worship differently from, say, malls or stores, because the activities from a COVID perspective are very different. People singing and people shouting and being in one place for a long time and so forth. And not only were those concerns waved away as part of the shadow docket, these cases which come up and are then disposed of without the full process, they were described as discrimination. So, Justice Gorsuch in particular, but others as well, said that it was discrimination in any case to treat a church differently from, say, a nail salon. But from a virus perspective, a church is very different from a nail salon, and a nail salon is safer, right? But it's not to say the nail salon is more valuable in some abstract sense or something like that. But from a virus perspective, from a viral transmission perspective, they're very different, and the nail salon is a lot less dangerous. Yeah. So to say that science was discrimination, that was surprising even to me. Yeah. And, there were four of those cases that came up to the Supreme Court that they decided during the pandemic. And I think reasonable people could disagree as to whether those restrictions were justified or were a good idea or, and so forth. But the way that they were framed in terms of this attack on religious liberty and part of a war against religion, that used to be language that, you and I talked about 10 years ago. Absolutely. That was just in white papers by think tanks 10 years ago. And now it was in Supreme Court opinions. So that redefinition has already happened. That's been encoded in, and it now has the support of a majority of justices.
So, Jay, if you were a betting man, what
Which
might you say we're likely to be talking about a year from now in terms of the Supreme Court and its impact on our lives?
I am going to sound a little bit optimistic. I think I've said a lot of negative things in the last few minutes, but I do think that we will have a decision in the Mississippi case almost certainly in June. It will almost certainly scale back, if not overturn Roe versus Wade. I think we're going to see the response to that in the 2022 elections. And based on public opinion in purple states in particular, these are not going to be decisions that are going to be popular. Democrats have already run on them in a couple of elections this year, right, sort of as trial balloons, and it has been successful. I'm up here in New York, and, there was a local election, and even that, I got the campaign literature, and it was like, Republicans are taking away your rights and so forth. So this is an issue that people care about, right, deeply. And it is about women's rights and women's equality. It's also about human rights, and it's about democracy and the limits of government. Can a government really, it's ironic, right, with sort of, again, the pandemic rhetoric of hands off my body. is the government really supposed to control women's bodies to this extent based on the religious views of one segment of the population and not even the largest segment? So that's what I think we're going to be talking about. I think we're going to be talking about the negative political effects of these decisions. I hope we're also talking about, you know, the debate over one or more of these reform proposals, whether it's term limits or court expansion or something else. I'm a little more pessimistic about that, but I'm hopeful. But I do think that it's definitely going to get worse before it gets better. But if folks who are listening and, you know, who are sympathetic, keep this toward the top of the agenda. You know, there's like a few of those issues, right, that we have to make our button issues. It might be climate change. It might be racial justice. And I think it should be the Supreme Court. You know, like this should be one of those top five issues that people highlight. And again, the sort of good news for progressives is that the numbers are absolutely on their side. Americans do not support this expansive power of government to control women's bodies, and they do not support the way the court has been captured by theocrats, and they don't support the dangerous cabal that Justice Alito has spoken about, which does exist and which he is part of. He said, you know, he speaks frequently at the Federalist Society, so he is a member of the dangerous cabal, and he's welcome to, you know, try to make it seem as though it's prejudice to recognize that, but it just isn't. That's what's actually happening.
Jay, what do you think about or hear about retirements?
Well, Justice Breyer, it does seem certain, will retire at this term. You know, at this point, because the filibuster for Supreme Court nominees is has been removed, it's again just going to be up to Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema who gets through. I'm sure the Biden administration will reach out to them directly. And, you know, we won't be seeing, you know, a hard left firebrand, I don't think, named to the court, because it does need to have the unanimous support of all of the senators in the Democratic Party. And that's just the way it is. If we don't like that, then progressives need to get involved in Senate elections. And we should have won Maine last time. We should have maybe won North Carolina last time. There was a lot that that progressives, religious progressives in particular, could have done, but we didn't do. And now it's consequences time. So we'll have another bite at that apple next year. So that's I think we will see Justice Breyer retire. Other than that, there won't be, I don't think there are any retirements on the horizon. You know, there are justices who are getting on in years, but they're, you know, that's of course up to a higher authority, as some people say.
Yeah. Okay. My last question is so belated, but it's still worth asking, I think. What can Americans of goodwill do today, if anything, to help mitigate the extremist impulses that may emanate from this court in the coming months?
Well, in the short term, as I've said, it's too late to change what's going to happen in this case. We can open our pocketbooks. There are a number of fantastic organizations that are helping women on the ground in Texas. You know, as we're recording this, there is now once again an injunction against that law, but that changes week by week. So there are women in need right now. And there will be more women in need after the decision comes down in June, whatever it says. So it's that kind of, you know, you shift from a kind of activism to just helping. And that's something that we'll need to be doing in the short term. And the activism that needs to happen, again, 2022 it's a very important election, but it's an off year. It's not a presidential election. And that means that the people who are the most organized and the most you know, devoted and motivated, tend to swing the elections. Generally, midterm elections disfavor the party in power. So there are good reasons the Democrats should be worried. Obviously, it's a long time from now. Anything could happen. I don't think that, you know, a few missteps, Afghanistan or whatever else, spell the doom for Democrats. There's still a long time to go. So this is a marathon, not a sprint. And the goal will be to retain at least the congressional majorities. And it would be nice, maybe increase the Senate majority for Democrats by one or two more seats. So it's rolling up the sleeves. It's getting involved. It's debunking this idea that the very hard right has a monopoly on what religion and religious faith mean in America. That's offensive. It's offensive to millions and millions of people. And as always, we've been down this road before. We've been down it on any civil rights struggle. And now it's going to be primarily about reproductive freedom, I think, and the human rights, whether women have human rights or not. And that's the kind of religious work that we need to be doing to state the pro-faith position for women to be treated as equal human beings with control over their bodies, which that's certainly at the core of my religious beliefs, yes, to put it mildly.
Mine also. Dr. J. Michelson is a rabbi, an author, activist, and attorney who is also a meditation teacher. Jay's latest book is titled Enlightenment by Trial and Error, 10 Years on the Slippery Slopes of Jewish Spirituality, Postmodern Buddhism, and Other Mystical Heresies. Jay, thanks so much for being with us on State of Belief Radio.
My pleasure. Thank you.